Hit it. Welcome to the Barrel Rollers Podcast for the week of May 24th, episode 10, We Free episode. I'm Cody.
I'm Nick.
And are you going to say that interrupts my introduction? Come on, out with it.
I'm Nick.
That's all. Done?
As usual.
Oh, okay. As our title suggests, shut up! As our title suggests, we have no Wii stories today, which means it's going to go really smoothly. But we haven't done an episode like this in which we're going to spend a little time talking about the games we have been playing lately. I know
you just said we. Games we have been playing lately. You promised a Wii-free episode. Well, there goes that. Move on.
You are an ass. So, we're going to talk about the games that Nick and I have been playing. Because it's episode 10, double digits. We really haven't talked about games that we personally have played, excluding games that just tend to come up in our stories. So, Nick, since your list is short, you go first.
All right. Games I've been playing lately. Not a huge selection of new games lately. I've been going back through my library playing some of my older games. I've been getting back into The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess. I know that was a launch title for the Wii. It came out like 3 years ago. But started to play it again, and I remembered how awesome of a game it is. It's just so sweet. I'm not going to lie, the wolf levels are kind of boring, but the parts where your Link is a human are just so cool and so well done. It's like taking Ocarina of Time and refining it and making a better game, and that's what Twilight Princess is. It feels like a refined Ocarina of Time.
It's really funny you mention that, because I know the first time I played it, and you look at the map, and it looks identical to Ocarina of Time, and I came in to the school, and I was like, dude, Nick, the map from this game is the same as Ocarina of Time, and you're just like, no, it's not.
Yeah, well, on the Wii version, it's kind of like the map from Ocarina of Time just flipped over, because
it has to be.
The whole game was reversed right before they released it, because they wanted players to be like Link and hold the sword in their right hand and their shield in their left hand and go on epic quest.
Yeah, but no one's going to blame me for playing that game, because I've already beaten it like 4 times, and I make it a goal to beat it once a year. So
it's a fantastic game, dude.
No complaints.
Yeah, not too many complaints, other than the wolf sections. The wolf sections are kind of boring.
Yeah, but you can fly through those.
Yeah, collecting bugs, not my idea of Zelda. Fighting crazy bad guys, solving wicked clever puzzles, that's Zelda.
Yes. Next.
The other game I've been playing a lot of lately, Rock Band 2. I know
that's surprising.
I've talked a lot about this game, but it's one of those games that you just can't put down. It's just so much fun. Whether you're alone with a band, playing online in a band, it doesn't matter. There's always new songs to download. The download library is huge on every console. Even the Wii is starting to catch up on downloadable content. Rock Band 2 is like Rock Band 1 on steroids, and I think it's an absolutely fantastic game, and I just can't get enough of it.
Next on your list.
I've been playing, going back to some of the Guitar Hero games, I finally beat the last song on Guitar Hero Aerosmith.
Wait, you had never beaten Train Kept Rolling.
Nope, I finally beat it the other day. So much trouble with it, but now
I'm
better at the Guitar Hero and Rock Band games, so I went back to it, and I finally beat Train Kept Rolling, and I unlocked Kings and Queens, and now I'm content with the fact that I beat Guitar Hero Aerosmith, which is an awesome game, by the way, because Aerosmith is awesome. And I wanted to go to the concert.
Beaten Train Kept Rolling.
Nope. And I wanted to go to their concert this summer, but their tickets are ridiculously expensive. So I decided, hey, I'll just pop the game into my Wii and play and pretend I'm there.
You could buy three Aerosmith games with the price of their tickets.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know why you'd want to buy
You
three,
have
but.
never beaten Train Kept a Rollin' until like a week ago.
Yep.
What is wrong with. No, doesn't work that way. When you play a Guitar Hero game, you play all the way through, even until your fingers hurt.
I know, I know. I tried Train Kept a Rollin' tons of times, just couldn't make it through, but now once I picked it up again, I beat in like a couple tries, so pretty happy I got through that finally.
Just go on to the next one. I'm too pissed at you.
I played Guitar Hero Metallica for the first time. I don't actually own it. It's at one of my cousins let me play it. Not a whole lot to say about it actually. It's Guitar Hero World Tour with more Metallica songs and Metallica band members. That's all there is to say about it. It's exactly Guitar Hero World Tour, just with different songs. I mean, not necessarily a bad thing, but I mean, that's all it is.
So I downloaded the demo for this for the 360, and I've got to say, if you've never played Guitar Hero before, make damn sure this is not your first Guitar Hero game, 'cause you will lose your frickin' mind.
That too. Even what seemed like the easiest Metallica songs are just insane.
So the demo I downloaded gave you like the first four songs of the set list, and I played them, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be easy. They weren't.
Yeah, they're the game. I mean, come on. Can you think of a Metallica song that's been in a Guitar Hero or Rock Band game that hasn't been impossibly freaking hard?
All I'm saying is I'm pissed that Master of Puppets wasn't in the demo, because that's really what I want to play.
Yeah, it's one of the easier songs,
Is
but
it really?
so yeah, but like if you think about it, in Guitar Hero 3 they had One by Metallica. I mean, that one
Okay,
took
we
to
need
beat.
to talk about how Guitar Hero is ruining the guitar experience for everyone with their touch slider. So you showed me. Okay, so put it. I love Guitar Hero 3. I love the entire gameplay. I have no complaints about it, except the stupid hammer-on glitch. That's kind of a pain. But I enjoyed playing one. I have to say that song I probably played the most on because it is just so much fun. And then you showed me the Guitar Hero Metallica version, and the entire solo is touch slider. Which, come on.
Yeah, I really can't believe they did that.
Touch sliding isn't even a real frickin' thing on the guitar.
It's pretty much just mash on keys and it'll sound just fine. Like you'll at least be able to pass it. You might not hit every note, but if you just mash on keys, you're all good. Which I think is a bit ridiculous, seeing that the people that played Guitar Hero 3 really had to suffer through that song. Suffer, put their heart and souls into that song.
I love playing that song, and there is no excuse why you can just attempt to create this little touch slidey thing that ignores all hammer-ons because you got complaints about how hard a guitar is to play. Well, face it, a guitar is hard to play. Quit your bitching.
Yeah, I don't know. Something I was hoping that it was just going to be the same chart, but apparently they really had to screw with it. Even the other parts of the song are toned down quite a bit from the Guitar Hero 3 chart,
Like,
and I
seriously,
kind of
it has Metallica in the name. You should expect to break a finger.
Well, to make you feel any better, there is a double expert level or expert plus level for the drums.
I don't care about the double bass pedal. Could care less about it.
You need the double bass pedal in order to beat it, and nobody can do it. So, that was another game I've been playing. And one last game, NES Punch-Out. I went back to that on the Wii Virtual Console because Punch-Out for the Wii just came out with pretty good reviews, by the way. I'd check out GameSpot or IGN or one of those sites. They have a pretty decent review. I have yet to play it, but I definitely want to play it pretty soon. And I went back to NES Punch-Out so I could get my Punch-Out fix while I'm waiting to play the new one.
Okay, now that you're done. Okay, now looking at these lists, I've been a lot busier than you when it comes to video games. But I included a
I've
couple
had
dead.
other stuff to do.
Yeah, good point. So I got a couple demos in here. I downloaded a couple demos the other day. I played through them all. They weren't hard. Let's go through this all. Mirror's Edge. I actually enjoyed Mirror's Edge, and Unfortunately, the game costs a shitload.
That's that extreme parkour game, right?
Yes, it's parkour extreme. And it is awesome. I gotta say, the game mechanics in that, spot on. The only problem is the game costs, I don't know, when it came out, it cost like $50, $60, and a lot of people returned it within a week because they beat it within a week. It's like a 5-hour game, which is a bummer, but I mean, I'll check out how much it is now. I might consider buying it if it's like 10, 20, 15, $20. Halo Wars. Now, I personally don't like RTSs on consoles, considering that the only popular one was StarCraft 64, which was a big slap in the face to anyone who enjoyed RTSs, because for some reason, no one has been able to get RTSs right on consoles until now. I actually enjoyed Halo Wars for a console. I didn't actually mind the fact that I was playing it on a console. Just the entire selecting units thing on a PC is usually you click and drag and select your units. And when they tried doing that in StarCraft, it was a pain in the ass because you'd click and then you'd drag, and usually the cursor goes off the screen and you end up selecting about 50 extra units you didn't mean to. Whereas in Halo Wars, you click it and hold, and this giant circle comes out from where you clicked, and it just selects all the units that are in that circle, which I thought was very interesting.
What else have you got?
Those are all the demos I've been playing. Oh, excluding the Guitar Hero Metallica, but I already talked about that. Okay, let's talk about this. I finally beat Halo 1 a couple weeks ago. I hated it!
Wow, you're the first person to ever tell me
I
that.
absolutely hated it. I had to really push myself to get through it. I couldn't stand it. And here's the reason why. Yeah, it might have been revolutionary at the time it came out. Big frickin' whoop. But seriously, those maps sucked. So basically, you'd be in this giant, like, chamber room, and you'd go through a hallway, go around a corner, you'd be in another giant chamber room that looked like the one you just came out of.
Sounds like Metroid Prime.
At least Metroid Prime had some distinction between, like some sort of symbol on the walls that actually told you, or at least signified to you, different areas that you'd been to. This didn't. Let alone, this didn't have a map you could bring up like Metroid Prime did and see exactly where you are. So most of the time I'd end up turning, I'd be like, oh, I've already been here. Turn around, go back, and find out, no, I hadn't been there. And it was a lot of retracing that I didn't need.
Well, I never really, well, like, I've never owned an Xbox, but I've heard a lot of good stuff about Halo. I've never played too much of it, but either way, I don't think you can deny how revolutionary it was in the world of console first person shooters. Before that, there was like GoldenEye,
It was Doom and Quake, that's about it.
Quake, yeah, and GoldenEye was the big thing. And no shooter had really been awesome on a console until Halo 1. And that really brought back the whole first person shooter, like the idea that first person shooters on consoles can be just as good as first person shooters on PCs.
I officially have to say I have no respect for Halo 1 because I just found out what year it came out in, which is 2001. And the reason why I have no respect for that is because Half-Life came out in 98, and I think that revolutionized first-person shooters more than Halo did. Whether people want to believe me or not, I think it did.
I think it's a different type of game, though, just because they're both first person. I would put Half-Life more in the category of something like Metroid, where it's more of a first-person adventure game than a shooter, even though there is quite a bit of shooting in it. I think the focus on in Half-Life is the puzzles and stuff like that, as opposed to Halo, where it's just like, oh, shoot 'em up, you know?
Okay, here's my thing. And I've always, let's put it this way. Half-Life has always been considered a first-person shooter. But I honestly don't think, I don't consider it a first-person shooter. I consider it first-person. And the reason why I say that is, yeah, there's shooting, but there's also puzzle solving. There's driving. There's everything you could ever cram into a first-person game, into a first-person experience, except for playing instruments. Really.
See, well, that's what I'm saying though. I think Half-Life fits more into like the Metroid category, Metroid Prime category than it does in the Halo category. I think a game like Call of Duty or Left 4 Dead is something that would be more in the Halo category of games, first
Left 4
person
Dead
games
is Left 4 Dead is
that.
nowhere near half. Left 4 Dead has basically no single player.
Well, what I'm saying is it's a game that relies more on shooting than it does on puzzle solving and things like that.
I actually think what Left 4 Dead relies on is community, because if you don't have three other people playing with you, if you have one bot, you are screwed.
Yeah, no, I hear you. We'll get to crappy bots in a little while. But...
yeah. Okay, next game. Fable 2. I've been addicted to this, and I'm actually quite pissed because I beat the game. I tried to complete... okay. When I first got this, I beat it in a couple days. I just rushed through the story just for the hell of it. And then I revisited it the past couple weeks, and I completed as many quests as I could before I actually beat the game. I beat the game. I got all that done. I have nothing to do now. There's no new quests. There's no nothing unless you buy DLC, which I will do in time. Let's be honest. I mean, there's nothing more enjoyable than buying extensions of games.
Oh, yeah, that's great. You know, plop down $60 for a game, and then, oh, hey, you got to buy extensions to it.
Bastards. Anyways, so yeah, I'm gonna throw it out. Well, I'll probably wait because there's a third DLC rumored to be coming out. I'll probably wait for that. I'll buy all three of those and I'll have fun with them. But I gotta say, that game is actually really fun. And I don't know if I stated it on any of the episodes, but it is the only game I know in which lesbian sex, unprotected lesbian sex, can lead to having a child.
I never do work like that, but...
Which would make Charles Darwin scratch his head.
I think that would make everybody scratch their head. I think that there'd be a worldwide head-scratching day if that actually happened.
And then all the men would watch in amazement. Next! Okay. I'm going to save the best for last, but let's go through a couple more of these. Kung Fu Panda. I beat that in a day, yes. It is a kiddie game. Yes, it did come with my Xbox 360, so no, I didn't pay for it. I gotta say, I actually enjoyed that. It was actually fun.
I've never seen the movie, but some of my friends say it's awesome.
I haven't seen the movie either. It's on my Netflix queue. I just haven't had the time to get around to put it on the top yet. But I gotta say, it's actually fun. You go around as a panda. You beat up random people with your kung fu moves. You get to play as multiple characters, not just the panda. And you basically get – it's basically like an adventure RPG, and you collect stuff when you're around. You get to spend stuff on upgrades. It's just all-around fun. There's nothing really wrong with it, and I was surprised. Next, Lego Indiana Jones, which also came with Kung Fu Panda came free with my Xbox. It was a dual thing. So this is my first Lego game ever, and I probably logged in like 4 or 5 hours today. That game is awesome! I always wondered the phenomenon of why people like playing with Legos on consoles, and I still can't put my finger on it, but it's fun.
I totally hear you. I own Lego Star Wars 1 and 2, and I gotta say, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, if you guys don't know, and I absolutely loved Lego Star Wars 1 and 2. Not only did it recreate all of the major scenes from all six Star Wars movies, which I thought was great, in chronological order, by the way. But I don't know. There's just something fun about it. It's something about the gameplay mechanics. They just did it right. The fact that you can't die makes it even better because it's not frustrating.
The one thing I like is that, yeah, you technically can't die. You lose all your health, which might seem kind of weird because you don't get punished, but you actually lose points for doing it. That's what I thought was amazing.
Well, here's the good thing. It's targeted to people of all different ages. Younger kids can just run through the levels and solve the puzzles and not care about collecting stuff and be on their merry way. Whereas older people, they can work for the point, like the highest point score, which are those studs. You got to get a certain number of studs to get a certain kit, a mini kit, and then you can put it together and it builds something really cool outside or something like that. But like, I mean, little kids can enjoy just as much by not worrying about all that extra stuff. But it really, it provides a challenge to both older gamers and more mature gamers and younger gamers. And for just a kickback and relax game, I mean, you can't get too much better than the Lego series, I don't think.
Yeah, I gotta say, I thought what was cool is that just about everything in all the maps can be just destroyed to collect Lego pieces. So if you're OCD, I suggest you don't play this because you will lose your mind trying to get every single stud that you can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, because they're all over the place.
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous.
It's a lot of – and very, very funny. They make fun of some of classic scenes in these movies a lot.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they just throw everything in there. I played a Lego level on Lego Star Wars 2, the Dagobah level where Luke goes to meet Yoda on Dagobah.
Dagobah.
And I just go to I'm like busting up these plants, and all of a sudden I find this tractor, and I'm riding a tractor around. Like, I mean, it's just really funny stuff, and I think it works great, and it's really funny too. It's not just like kid humor; it's like genuinely funny stuff. Because I mean, the fact that you're playing through these more serious scenes with Legos in the first place, come on, how serious can you get with that?
Yeah, it kind of makes me sad that they're doing a Lego Rock Band because half the game mechanics just won't carry over.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to see about that. I'm not passing judgment on that yet. We'll see how they do. I'm going to buy that game based on how the track list is. Depending on what the track list in the game is, that's what's going to make it or break it for me. I don't really care about the fact that they're Legos or not. It can go either way for me. But if the track list is good, I'll probably get it.
Okay. I've covered every game that I've been playing except one. Team Fortress 2. Team Fortress 2 came out with the orange box, and with this came 9 classes. You got the Heavy, the Medic, the Pyro, the Demo Man, Engineer, Spy, Soldier, Scout, and I'm missing one. Who am I missing? Well, I'll probably figure it out later. But the cool thing about Steam is that ever since they put the orange box on the 360, they've been coming up with achievements. And even Steam now has achievements ever since the orange box. What's more interesting is that over the past couple years since it came out, they've been releasing updates to Team Fortress 2 so that each class has its own achievement base. Which, Nick, you there? I want to hear your opinion on that.
Yeah, I'm definitely here. Each class having its own achievement base, I think that's pretty sweet. I like how they don't expect every character in the game to do the same thing. Although I have played a little bit of Team Fortress 2. I haven't gotten too into it. One of my friends at school showed it to me on his PC. I thought it was pretty cool. For a deathmatch game, I thought it was pretty sweet. I like the dude with the flamethrower, but
the Pyro, yes. I've been being him for a while, and there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is that last week they released a new update that added achievements. They've been gradually rolling out these achievements for each class. And last week they added achievements for the Spy and the Sniper. And the reason why I'm being the Pyro is because usually you think, oh, Spy and Sniper, everyone's going to be a Spy and Sniper now. I'm going to be a Pyro because, one, Pyro's flames can just easily detect spies. And because most snipers are probably zoomed in, so they ain't going to see me. So I've been just kicking everybody's ass who's a Spy and a Sniper.
That's pretty sweet, dude. Not going to lie.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another cool thing about Team Fortress 2 is that with the achievements, you can actually tell it to show your progress on an achievement in the game, the HUD, the human user. What the hell does the HUD stand for? HUD?
Human user.
Display? Display?
But yeah, that's it.
Okay, human user display, the HUD.
You know what? I think we might be wrong. I'll look it up.
Okay, anyways. So you can display these achievements on the interface in the top corner. And what's interesting is it only displays the ones that you marked off for that class. So if you have some for the Scout, if you're a Pyro, it's not going to show those. And what's really cool is that – so I've been the Pyro lately, and one of my achievements is to do a 1 million damage total. And every time I die – every time I respawn, it'll come up in the top corner and actually show me how much damage I did on my last life. So it incrementally updates based upon – it's live updating based upon what you do, which I thought was really cool.
Heads-up display.
Heads-up display. Okay. So another thing that came about this is when they first started implementing achievements, they had milestones. And basically the milestone said like – so for the Heavy, it said like – the Heavy is a guy with a machine gun. He's fat. He's very slow, but he's extremely powerful. The heavy, it would, on the achievements list, it would say milestone one, get 14, you'd be like, get 14 achievements. So once you get 14 achievements, you unlock that milestone and you'd be able to get a new weapon, which was interesting because people created custom levels that were geared towards just getting the achievements so everyone could have the weapons. They could unlock all the milestones as they wanted to and they'd get all the weapons at once, which for someone like me who didn't play a lot of Team Fortress 2 at the time, I definitely did that just so I wouldn't be behind. I don't do it now because I find it's cheap. But now they don't even let you do that because with the Spy and Sniper update, they now made all of the items basically time-based. So you will get items randomly, but it's all based on how much time you put in. So even on their website, they said if you put 20 hours, or if you play for 2 weeks consistently, you will end up with about 20 items at the end of those 2 weeks, which I thought was interesting until they screwed up the coding and basically the day the patch came out, people could be spectating and they get random items, which is a pain in the ass. But they fixed that now. It's all good now, but I just wanted to bring – what?
So the big difference with PC games versus console games is that on PC games, like multiplayer games, you play games on – individually, privately owned servers, whereas on console games, you play games on servers owned by the companies. I know that the thing with owning a private server is that it makes it so easy to hack. What do you think about that? I know on the PC version of Call of Duty World at War, there was a time where servers could set the points per kill on their server, and on Call of Duty World at War, people were putting it up to like hundreds of thousands of points for every kill so that people could upgrade in a matter of no time. What do you think of the fact that these servers are so easily modified?
Well, I mean, see, that's the thing is that the good thing about Steam is that, yeah, you can even modify your own personal ones. There's a special SDK available to mod. I forget exactly what it's called, but it's basically source code that you can put on your server and you can basically set specific parameters. Like these things are widely available. You can get them on Day of Defeat, Counter-Strike Source, Counter-Strike, Half-Life 2 Deathmatch, Left 4 Dead. Left 4 Dead I don't know about, but Team Fortress 2, stuff like that. And basically what this does is it – so basically when you get the game, all it is raw code. And you can get like a dedicated server program that will create a dedicated server. The only problem with that is that it doesn't keep track of a lot of things. The only thing it's meant to do is like simulate a level so that other people can join. What these modifications and SDKs can do is they can actually save information. So like on a lot of servers for Counter-Strike Source, you can actually type in rank and it'll tell you how many kills you've totaled, like stuff like that. What's your rank against other people who have played on the server? There's even been stuff like if you get certain kills, you get points and you can upgrade those points. And I once played at an RPG server, which was a pain in the ass because everyone was flying everywhere and you couldn't shoot them. But, you know, I don't think there's a difference because are you talking about the way that achievements are ranked based on what happens on the server?
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is, like, I use the example of Call of Duty. People can mod their servers so that they can kind of cheaply unlock achievements by using these cheaply made servers. Like, for instance, in Call of Duty, when you bring up the points per kill to like thousands and all of a sudden you're on the highest possible level in a matter of a few rounds, what do you think about like the ability to do that? Do you think that companies should be a little more tight about that? Because it's not completely fair to players that play on other servers that aren't modded and that are more fair.
You know, I can't say I've ever encountered this because the way Steam handles it is your achievements are completely separate from the server.
True. All right. No, but I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there because it seemed like something that you were talking about.
But yeah, like on Steam, like if you play a Steam game, if you're playing Team Fortress 2 and you get a kill, that's one kill. No matter how many times the server wants to tell you you got a kill, according to Steam, that's one kill. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what exactly the parameters are for a server. Everything based on your achievements is going to end up being the same.
Oh, that's pretty nice. That's a good way of regulating it, I think.
Yeah. But I think we need to move on.
Yeah, let's hit up some news topics. We don't have a whole lot today.
Okay, first, we have to talk about this paper.
All right.
So, one of my friends started listening to the podcast. He started listening to old episodes, and he was pissed at us. Now, let's put this into perspective. He is a Sony fanboy. Now you know why he's pissed at us. He listened to the episode titled "Sony's Piece of Shit." What was the title? Sony's Piece of Shit That Does Nothing, something like that.
Sony's stupid piece of shit that does f***ing work.
Okay, thank you. So he listened to that episode and he typed up a 2-page paper telling us why we were wrong. And Nick, what do you have to say about it?
Very well written. Kind of woke me up a little bit. I don't know. Talked a lot about how the Sony PS3 does have its downsides. And yes, Sony made tons of mistakes, and I'm sure you've heard us talk about it. But he did talk about the number of upsides to the PS3. I do agree that it's a console that's very capable of a lot of stuff that that the other two consoles can't do. It almost seems like it's too early for its time,
It's like the
though.
Dreamcast of this generation.
Well, what I think is it's a bit too early for its time. Maybe not so much now, but at the time of its release, it was way too advanced, and the cost, I mean, it's a great system, but the cost of making it was just insane and very unmarketable for today's video game market. And I think had Sony released something like this a few years later, like this year or next year or whatever, I think they could have sold that at a lower price, attracted developers faster, and gotten more better games on it. That's my problem with PS3. I don't. He did mention something about the PS3 having better overall games than the Wii,
No, I said
which
more quality games.
more quality games than the Wii, and I don't think I can agree with that. Sure, yes, the Wii has had tons of total crap third-party titles, but as far as first-party and second-party titles go, most of them have been right on the mark.
As we were talking about before, the PS3 does have some quality games, and what we think he meant was based on the amount of games available. They definitely have, like, if you were to take the ratio of quality games versus most available, yeah, PS3 would win. No doubt. The only problem is they do have a decent amount of quality games. They just don't have a lot of games in general, which is a pain in the ass. And I just want to make a statement saying that my friend now came up on Steam and said he's playing Team Fortress 2.
So
So.
yeah, that's all I really have to say about that letter. Cody, I'm sure we can get a copy of that in our
Yeah,
blog somewhere.
I'll put a copy of it in there.
All right, it'll be there if you guys want to read it.
I just
I don't want
want
to
to
waste
I just
time.
want to say, if you're going to go back and listen to this episode, make sure you listen to the following one where I actually what basically what I said was, yeah, the PS3 has great graphics. Yes, it has a lot of good features. And yes, if you were to compare it to the Xbox 360, the PS3 would be a better buy. The only problem is it's too much money.
And it's not supported as well as the 360.
That's another thing. It doesn't have as many supporters, and that's really the biggest thing. Yes, it is a great console, but what accompanies a console? Games. You need the games.
Here's the thing I think about Sony. I think that their console is something that doesn't need to be changed in the next few years. Unlike the 360 and the Wii, they're going to eventually begin to die. But I think the PS3 is a console that was so like developed. It felt like a console from 5 years into the future and not a console of today. And I think that what Sony can do is just find a way to remarket the P I know I said this last episode, find a way to remarket the PS3, get a new interest in the PS3, get develop more developers on board with the PS3. And I think that they're going to have a winner right there. It's not a bad console. It was too early for its time.
I think what they need to do is they need to put the backwards compatibility in because
And
last month the
backwards compatibility, I guess.
PS2 last month outsold PS3. That's saying something.
Yep. PS2, I don't like Sony just needs to go back, look at what made the PS2 so successful, and ride on that. That's what I think.
Okay, now getting into actual stories. This first one is the top 10 most common game design mistakes. And let's go through a couple of these. Incomprehensible puzzles. Yes, incomprehensible puzzles are annoying. I do think that the example here is Half-Life. I don't like that example because honestly, the first time I played it, I didn't have any problems solving any puzzles. Let alone the image that they have here is some guy trying to find out like a specific tunnel to go through. That's not a puzzle. That's just your own damn problem because you can't see where to go.
All I'm saying is that incomprehensible puzzles, there's something that you're starting to see less in games.
I will
In
say that.
the early games, especially those on the NES, I mean, think of the original Zelda.
Oh my God.
Oh, go down to screen H4 and burn the fourth tree from the right. Like, who would have thought of that? Like, that's a bit ridiculous. But I think, like, if you look at Zelda games today, they're a bit more. Like, they don't give you the answer, but they at least point you in the right direction. And I think that's what games need to do.
I want stuff like the Master Quest,
All
which
right,
I
move.
still have not played, but I want to. Next one, Clueless AI. Yes, there are way too many programming errors with AI that people need to accommodate for.
Yeah, especially, I know a game like Lego Star Wars, some of the Lego games, the enemies pretty, not the enemies. Your partner is pretty clueless. But I mean, this has been a problem for a long time. Some games have done all right with it. Some games just can't seem to find a way to get smart AI. I think that's something, if you're going to really rely on AI these days, you need to have them be somewhat intelligible.
Right. Next, QuickTime events. I don't have a problem with QuickTime events. I just like them. I wish, my only gripe is that I wish they'd tell you that the game has QuickTime events until it's too late and you're sitting down drinking something in the middle of a cutscene and you get cut.
I think in games like Resident Evil, I think they definitely work. It makes them very cinematic, and it makes you feel like you're still somewhat part of the action, even though you're pretty much just watching a cinematic cutscene. And I
Right.
think it definitely keeps you on your toes, which is something that Resident Evil wants to do.
Right. I will say Kung Fu Panda had QuickTime events, and they weren't the best.
All right, moving on. Injecting story where it isn't needed.
I honestly can't think of a game I've played where this has happened.
Well, there are some games where the cutscenes obviously go on way too long and there's a bunch of extra stuff. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but there are some games that's just like, all right, can we please get started here?
Yeah, really. Changing the entire gameplay style without a good reason. I can't think of any from that.
Well, there's a lot of like one of the things that they threw in there was like first person shooter games that randomly start driving games. I know Call of Duty 3, I'm thinking here, where it's like, oh, hey, look at you're fighting crazy enemies. Oh, look, you're in a Jeep. This is so underwhelming. You know, like stuff like that.
My favorite game of all time is that.
What?
Half-Life 2.
Well, here's the thing. It's not a bad thing when you change the gameplay style and the change is good, but if it feels like they're like, oh, well, we should do something a little different for this level, and then like half-ass it, I think that's more what they mean, and it's kind of annoying.
Fear of saves. I didn't read this part, but is this basically saying that they don't want you to autosave or what?
No. They're saying that they like auto-saving. They hate when games make you play forever without being able to save.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I kind of wish they were both. I wish you could have an autosave so that it saves when you need it to, but that you could also save by yourself at the same time. I think that's the best.
Yeah, I think in any game you should be able to always save right where you are. I think ideally in a game you should be able to pick right back up from where you left off, but I know that isn't always possible. What I'm saying is games need lots of checkpoints and games need the ability to at least save your stats all the time. It gets kind of ridiculous when it's like You have to go somewhere right away or something, or like you're almost scared to pop in a game because you know if something comes up, you're going to be screwed and all the gameplay that you're playing just isn't going to work. I know I felt this way about the original Resident Evil game, how they made you use those stupid ink ribbons and they made you like think like 100 times, like, oh, have I gotten far enough to save? How far have I gotten? I wonder how long this game is. And I think when you're thinking about when you're going to save more than you're thinking about the game, I think it becomes an issue.
Okay, we're going to discuss two more of these because we don't have time to talk about them all. But this next one, overcomplication. Yeah, I completely understand when a game throws way too much shit at you, and it's the main reason why I do not play MMOs. Because I don't want to sit there for 5 hours trying to figure out what do I need to keep and what don't I, and what class should I be if I want to keep a certain weapon.
I hear you.
Seriously. I mean, it's the same as the old Fallout games. Yes, the old Fallout games were nice, but the fact that at the beginning of every game you had to pick your character and then pick what stats your character has and what enhanced stats your character has, clicking through 10, 20, actually, with the Fallout games, it was like 40 different stats to figure out what each one does, and you have to decide then and there what you want to do. Kind of annoying. Very, very turn-offish. But I still played them, and they were actually quite fun. And then the final one is unskippable, like cutscenes or intros, stuff like that. Seriously, if I can't skip through a cutscene, I'm leaving and going to the bathroom. Either way, I'm not watching your damn show.
Well, here's the thing. I don't mind, like, I like watching cutscenes the first time, but after you see it once, if you have to, like, reboot the level or for some reason stop and save your game and then restart your game, you shouldn't have to watch the same cutscene again. That's
Right.
bullshit to have to watch the exact same cutscene you already saw over and over. So even if it's not skippable the first time through, you should definitely be able to skip it the next time.
And that is why I love Half-Life 2, because there's like two cutscenes in the entire freaking game, the beginning and the ending. Other than that, you were in complete control all the way through.
Very cool. All right,
Okay.
Code, what else do we got?
Okay, this is your story, Nick. So, let's hear you talk about it. California appeals game law to Supreme Court.
Yep, so they're at it again in California. I don't know what it is about California, but they really hate mature video games. There was a new law that tried to get passed about mature, trying to prevent the sale of mature video games to children. The law was going to prevent the sale of violent video games to young children. On it had to bear a 2-inch, on any violent video game, there has to be a 2-inch by 2-inch sticker with a solid white 18 outlined in black, showing that people under 18 can't play this game or can't buy this game. And under this law, retailers that sold such these games to children would be subject to a $1,000 fine. Governor Schwarzenegger had signed into the bill into law, but it was brought to a court, which is I find really interesting because wasn't Arnold Schwarzenegger the same guy who was in every ultra-violent action movie of the 1980s and made every single 1980s kid think they were Terminators?
Nick,
Yes.
did you just quote that from this article?
No.
You didn't? I thought that was in the article.
I didn't see it.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Yeah. Basically, he was the person fighting the Predators, and he was the Terminator. Yeah. I mean, seriously? I played GTA when I was like 10. Give him a break.
Yeah, I don't know about this game.
This game, it's not a game.
Or you know what I mean? Like I don't know about this law. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I definitely think that children should be monitored when playing games.
Oh, definitely.
I don't think little kids should be playing Resident Evil 5 and stuff like that. But I think that's more of a parental thing than a video game company thing. I think parents need to be on top of this stuff. I think it's the parents' responsibility to make sure their kids aren't playing games that could possibly affect them negatively.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say I am going to let my kid, son, or daughter play Resident Evil 5 so that they are fully prepared when a zombie apocalypse comes. What is your response to that?
I have absolutely no response, sir. You are completely insane.
I'm just being prepared. Better safe than sorry. You know what the scout motto is? Always be prepared. That's what I'm doing. I am preparing my children for the zombie apocalypse so that when I die, they know how to wield a shotgun and they know where to aim the gun at the zombie's head. They will also play Left 4 Dead so they can get good co-op skills.
Good thing the Wii Zapper came out. Anyway, what else do we have on the...
Okay, you know what? I just want to say this isn't in the rundown, but aside from this, there's actually a law in New York that's coming about that basically New York is trying to tax everything these days. A couple months ago, maybe a year ago, they actually put a tax on downloadable music so that you actually have to pay tax on downloadable music, which is complete bullshit. But now there's another law that's saying they're going to tax video games, junk food, and movies. So basically they're trying to just completely tax everything that's bad for you.
And bore us to death for not wanting to pay it.
Seriously.
All right, what else do we got?
More Americans are buying video games and playing them than they are going to the movies.
We would like to play. I think the Wii has had a huge factor on this.
No, I think the fact that video games, most of them have the same amount of cost effect. Like, seriously, the amount of money it takes to make a video game is coming very close to the amount of money it takes to make a movie. Now, I'm not saying like a big ass movie like Star Trek. That's different. But I mean, average, yeah, they're probably about the same.
Well, here's the thing. I think more Americans are realizing that they can get movies cheaper if they wait for them to come out on DVD or through downloadable services, and they just don't go to the movies anymore. And I think that people are realizing that they grab a Wii or grab a 360 or, yes, grab a PlayStation 3. Yup, they can do that too. I think that they realize that there's a lot more long-lasting value in that. I think that the Wii and games like Guitar Hero and Rock Band are mostly responsible for this. I'm not sure if we'd see a statistic like this if it weren't for those things.
No, I don't think we see a statistic like this if it wasn't for a down economy. But, you know,
that too.
You know, I always thought this was weird in that people are willing to spend $50 to play a game that takes them like 6-7 hours to beat, maybe 5. And then they go to the movies, they pay like $8 to $10 to see 2.5 hour movie. Or an hour and a half to 2.5 hour movie. When, if you think about it, it actually, in a way, if you pick the right theater, can be cheaper to go see a movie. Now, I've always judged the worthness of a video game based on something one of my teachers said, and he said, if you could choose to pay $1 for every hour of a video game you play, would you? And at first you're like, no, that seems like complete bullshit. I'm not going to pay a dollar for every hour that I play a video game. But if you think about it, you can pay $50-$60 for a game like Mirror's Edge that takes you 5 to 6 hours to beat. That's paying $10 an hour. So I think in a way, there really is no – other than the fact that you can talk while playing a video game, there is no like factor of which one you should do.
And I'm just wondering if this is may just be more of a preference thing too. Are people getting sick of just watching action happen and would rather be immersed in it? I mean, video games are coming close to being movies, interactable movies. And I don't know, are people just – do movies bore people now or do people seek some sort of thrill that movies can no longer provide? And it kind of scares me because that's the industry I'm going into.
You know, I really think it's one of those things where if you're playing a video game, you can also be on your cell phone. You can be having a drink. You can eat food. You can talk to others. Whereas – with a movie, it's like a one-track mind. You have to watch what's on the screen, damn it, and you're going to like it. Whereas someone like me, I get Netflix. I hardly ever watch my movies now because I can't help but take out my laptop and check Twitter. It's like I am just prone to multitasking my brains out. And at a movie theater, I can't do that.
Interesting. What else do we got, Cody?
On Live is not going to be at E3, those bastards. Basically,
what company is OnLive being put out by again?
It's their own company.
Okay.
It's a company started by the creator of QuickTime.
Oh, wow.
So according to him, he knows video compression.
Yeah, I'm sure he does, seeing that he invented QuickTime.
I would say he knows 1990s video compression. Probably not 2008 video or 2009 video compression. That's not the point. But he says that he is not going to show the service off at a retail-oriented event, which is complete bullshit. Because seriously, how many of us are going, is that thing going to work or not? And yeah. I don't know what to make of this.
I mean, I've heard a lot of talk about being able to download, like within the next few years, getting rid of disc and all your games will be downloadable. But I've never heard too much to bring it so far as to say we'll be playing all of our games solely online in the next few years. And I think people would be really skeptical about something like this because it relies completely on your internet settings and not so much on the console you have anymore. So right. I think it's going to be really interesting because, I mean, the console really doesn't have to be that powerful. It just has to be fast. That's the only thing required for something like this because the game's going to be – it's going to be sent to you virtually from a server somewhere else. And I just think it's a very interesting concept because it definitely brings gaming in general to the next level. And who knows if games are going to be something that people actually own in the next 10 years.
You know, talking about this whole OnLive thing, this is a complete tangent, but we have to cover this. So as I've said before, I don't think this is going to work because of internet speeds. And our buddy Sam left a comment on one of our posts, and he said, by 2013, hardware might be obsolete. If OnLive becomes a hit, all you would need is a high-speed internet connection. This would save companies a lot of money and end piracy forever. The only problem is that you need to address lag and latency. But by 2013, everyone will have 5 megabits down or higher. You know, I have a lot of problems with this. One, let's address this. Lag and latency are the same thing. I know a lot of people consider them different, but lag is just a gamer term for latency. So a bit redundant. Not your fault. A lot of people say lag and latency in the same sentence. It's not your fault. It's just a technicality I want to address. Next, I do not think by 2013 everyone will have 5 megabits down or higher because some people still are on dial-up. That's complete bullshit. That needs to be addressed right now. Second, I don't think this is going to work because I think that this entire thing has to do with lag and latency. Now, lag, the amount of lag has nothing to do with – I shouldn't say that. It has very little to do with how fast your internet connection is. Like if you're getting internet by satellite and you're getting 5 megabits down, yeah, you can be getting 5 megabits of data a second. But lag is the amount of time it takes for your information to get from your house to the central server. So if it has to go up in space and then beam back down, your lag is going to be pretty high even though your download speed is going to be quite large. So I think – the main problem is going to be lag. There is way too much internet traffic that is just completely bombarded by the amount of server hops – this is getting so technical – that are in our society. I think there's way too many routers and servers and server farms in America that this is not going to work effectively.
All right. Just want to throw something out there though. Think of the internet 10 years ago. 1999.
Yep.
Things like high-speed internet were brand new at that time, and most people got online with something that kind of sounded like dead cats killing each other. So I think if we're just going to say, oh, 10 years from now, I think the internet might be a very different place. Nobody had dreamed before probably of a computer being connected to the internet 24/7, always accessed and having speed, blazing fast speeds, being able to load a web page in a matter of a second or two. I think 10 years from now, I think the internet will be very different.
That's the thing. 10 years from now, I would agree. He didn't say 10 years from now. He said 4 years from now, 2013.
Right. I don't know. We'll just have to see. But I'm just saying the internet has come such an indescribably long way since it originally came out. And I think that 10 years from now and beyond, I think the internet's gonna take a huge new leap because I don't think we're even close to the potential of what the internet can do yet.
Okay, I know we need to get MatPat back on to explain the technicalities of how the American internet infrastructure was set up. But I want to say by 2013, we are going to be kicking ourselves in the or kicking ourselves because I don't think people realize how horrible the American internet infrastructure is. And I think by then they're going to spend so much money to try to rebuild it, it's going to be pointless. I do believe that in 10 years it probably will be different. But
Okay, we really need to move on.
I. Yeah, okay. Pepsi pops for free Rock Band songs basically on June 2nd. I don't know when this thing's going to
And
end.
after, you're going to be able to enter a code from your Pepsi bottle caps, and you might get some free Rock Band DLC. Sounds pretty cool to me. I get a Pepsi and DLC for the price of a Pepsi. I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't like this though because most of the time it's like you have to punch in the code and it's like you're an instant winner. Whereas this, it's like yeah, you punch in your code and then you get thrown into a ra like a raffle with everyone else. And the only th there's no it's so arbitrary the way they're gonna pick these things.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, to me, the hopes of winning a Rock Band song, when I walk into a store looking for a drink and I have to choose between Pepsi and Coke, and Pepsi has the possibility of me winning free Rock Band DLC, I don't see any reason not to buy it.
Yeah. Okay, we got one more story here, and this is just complete BS. Walmart is going to enter the used game industry. That's right, I said it. The used game industry.
And
Now,
then make sure you get your Walmart branded shackles and put those on too, and tie yourself to the Walmart servitude chair and kiss their feet and do whatever they want because they will own you in the next 10 years.
what Walmart could have done is they could have gone the more efficient way. They could have hired people to make sure that every single disc you put in is legit, that it works, and that you're not getting screwed, thus making you happier and thus hiring people for jobs. But no, they went and created a freaking box in which you have to scan the barcode in, and then you gotta like put the disc in to check if it's like an optical disc or something, and then you just throw it into the thing and you get store credit. Like, seriously?
No comment whatsoever. I don't even know what to say to that. Taking the, it's going to be like Redbox, but for used games, right?
I don't even know what Redbox is.
Well, it's a movie rental service. It's in like some of the major convenience stores and stop and shops and stuff like that. You basically just insert money, they give you DVD, you bring DVD back next day. Like no human contact involved. And I'm kind of scared because that means it's killing jobs and it's just making these big companies richer. But we don't have to get into politics now.
Well, here's the thing, and that is, it's the way it's described is that you could put any disc into a case, and the only thing you're gonna get is the value of the game that's on the case.
I don't know about that. There's just I don't know. There's just something about it. Just the fact that Walmart's trying to get into something like this now, it worries me a little bit. I wonder what the future holds for places like GameStop and Game Crazy that just are completely dedicated to this business.
Here's the thing that really pisses me off.
Grinds your gears.
This is what pisses me off. These boxes are complete. It doesn't make sense. You could just take all the games that you hate, put them in game cases that are popular, and you'd get more money for a game that doesn't even, that isn't
See,
even.
I think you're dwelling a little too much on the technical part of it. I don't think Walmart will allow people to just insert a
How do
DVD.
you know?
Well, I'm
That's
just
the
saying.
thing. It's not a person checking. It's a computer.
No,
You
but
don't
the
know.
computer's going to find a way to read the disc. I'm sure Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft will give them some type of a hardware that'll allow them to read the product and confirm that it's legit.
No, see, here's the thing, is that no gaming company is ever going to agree to give them licenses because gaming companies hate used games. Because they don't make any money on used games.
I'm just saying, I doubt highly that Walmart's just going to allow you to stick a DVD-R in a case and get money from it. But, I mean, you never know. It is Walmart.
The other thing is, if this is like any other type of, like, Walmart, like, return policy, they're probably just going to put it in a shrink wrap machine and then sell it for new.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. We'll have to see about that. But whatever, I think we're dwelling a little too much on this. I think we should wrap it up.
Hold on, I'm just going to read exactly how this thing works. So basically, you go into a Walmart, you'll create an account that you'll log into every time you trade in a game to machines that are on this account, and you'll presumably access it on any Walmart used game kiosk. There is also a slot on the side for your credit card or debit card. It's uncertain what role the card plays into trading in games, but my guess it's for some sort of accountability, who's trading in what game, etc. Once you've inserted the used game, the machine will print out a voucher for the in-store credit. These kiosks, which accept PS2, PS3, Wii, and 360 games, are only in a few Walmart stores right now, but seem to be working their way into many more locations. I can't even believe this is happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about Walmart starting on this business, but whatever. I guess that concludes our episode for now.
Should have been Walmart hate episode.
Whatever. Thanks for listening. I know this may have seemed kind of like a shallow episode, but trust me, next week is E3 2009. We're definitely going to be covering it for you.
Definitely
tune in. All the major stories we're definitely going to cover as far as E3 goes. So I know there wasn't much to talk about this week because the gaming convention of the year is coming up next week.
It was a pretty slow week.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to have a ton of stuff. So thanks for listening and have a great week.
Wade, just to skip the plugs, if you want to check us out at thebrpodcast.blogspot.com. Check us out on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter @TheBeast33. And that will do it. Have a good day.
Have a good one.